Welcome to Cybersecurity Insights, the podcast for the cybered.io learning community. Our goal is to bring cybersecurity practitioners the latest and most relevant education and training to upskill and dive deeper into topics that matter in today's modern cybersecurity world.
A good day, everyone. This is Steve King. I'm the managing director at cybered.io, and today we're hosting Arthur Levinsky, who's the CEO and founder of Umnitsa. Did I pronounce that right, Arthur?
You did, yes, yeah, Steve. You
all right. A company that has just been acknowledged by Forrester's, one of the notable vendors in the software asset management solutions category, I think, this last quarter. So, you know, congratulations for that. That is never easy to get done, so good job. Prior to Umnitsa, Arthur ran his own international digital marketing company and was a senior manager at the SAP Center of Excellence, where I have spent a chunk of my career back in the day when I was running the SAP practice for Whitman Hart in the Pacific Coast region. So we have a lot in common in that regard. So welcome, Arthur. It's great to have you on the show.
Great to see you, Steve, and it's great to hear about your time at SAP. That's funny that that unites us.
Yeah, right. So tell us, please, our audience might not know what software asset management means, at least in the kind of broader sense here, and maybe you can characterize what that means both to Forrester and to you guys in terms of a narrower definition.
Yeah, well, software asset management often goes side by side with something like hardware asset management, and then you have the infrastructure asset management, and the list kind of goes on. And what all these different prefixes to asset management represent is the different technologies that any one company has inside of their estate. And the way Forrester, which we're very happy to be mentioned in the report, the way they view the world today is in these fractions. So you have software asset management, which we're a leader in. You have hardware asset management, which we're a leader in. You have infrastructure asset management, which we're a leader in. And one would ask, well, how are these all different from each other? Of course, software asset management manages software, hardware asset management manages hardware, infrastructure, and so on. Well, the change that's occurred in the CIO and CISO teams is that there's so much technology that we have created now, four or five different categories. And the opportunity that our customers see and the early adopters in this business is that there is a unified system of process around all these various technologies and these silos that they live in. So you don't need to go into your software asset management system to manage the licenses of your SaaS model, investments. You don't have to jump in just your hardware asset management system in order to do a refresh process for end user computing. You don't have to jump into a separate third-party system to make sure that your AWS servers are encrypted. These are all very specific use cases of work that most IT teams do every day, but they do them in these silos. So what Umnitsa has done is built what we call enterprise technology management. And the technology management part encompasses the hardware, the software, the infrastructure, and allows you to run automated workflows across all of those technologies from one centralized system. That's the power of using Umnitsa. So you'll find us in software asset management, hardware asset management, infrastructure asset management. You'll find us in many of those reports because enterprise technology management, which is the future category that encompasses all of these items, that is the new tool that is now entering most of the IT orgs in the nation and soon in the world.
Yeah, and for a marketing guy, you probably thought that was pretty funny. This is all just technology asset management, I take it. How does technology asset management as a thing, if you will, how does it impact security and compliance?
Sure, yeah. Well, managing the enterprise technology in the organization is really five things that companies look at. You're right. Security is one of them. Of course, the security of the data that's associated with the SaaS applications, you know, Salesforce, of course, SaaS application, NetSuite SaaS application, Workday, those types of applications have security concerns. There's, of course, the endpoints that have the security aspect of it, the data that's on the device, access to that data, PII data, things of that sort. And of course, threat detection, preventative sorts of things like making sure that every device has an endpoint protection agent installed or is encrypted or antivirus is running. Those types of things, of course, fall into it too. But alongside security, there is a few other things that matter. So there's security, but there's also the compliance aspect that is really important to these technologies, the audit compliance aspect. There's a major financial component to this technology. A lot of the customers that we're speaking to now, at least on the software side, will talk about license discrepancies or being able to get those licenses back, turning your capital expenses into operational expenses when you're thinking about end user compute refresh inside of your organization. That can only be done with an enterprise technology management system because it requires your system to start automating those processes. Otherwise, you're going to have devices that come in late. It's going to be hard to get those devices back. There's a lot of challenges that come along with that. So leasing devices oftentimes is hard for companies because they don't have an enterprise technology management system to manage that process for them and mitigate any penalties that may occur. So the security portion, the compliance portion, the audit portion, the finance portion, and then last but not least is the customer and user experience portion. A lot of these enterprise technologies, especially in retail environments, they're really customer facing. And so when you're thinking about walking into a retail environment today, oftentimes it's not about warehousing and inventory like it used to be. You know, can I get the peppers from the back? Now it's, I'm going to look at this inside of, you know, for instance, the Peloton retail store. I may not walk out with a Peloton, but that experience that I have in the store is just as important. Also, as IT teams, the service, our customers are often the internal teams. So we look at that as customer experience too, making sure that a new onboarded employee is ready to go or an executive in a meeting has all of the technologies he or she needs in order to be successful. So again, it's security, it's compliance, it's audit, it's finance, and of course, it's user and customer experience when you're talking about technology management.
Yeah. So how do you capture customer experience in a retail store?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you take an example like, we'll just pick out our friends here in Cupertino. You walk into an Apple store, all of the devices, all of the connectivity, all of the infrastructure required for an individual to walk around and try the new MacBook, try the new iOS device. There's internet connectivity around the networking equipment. There's display technologies, you know, various LED screens and things of that nature. Then there's the actual devices themselves that are on the shop floor. I'm sorry, I should say the retail floor. All of those technologies, if you think about the old guard, would be managed in silos. Enterprise technology management takes that holistic approach. You don't expect to have multiple databases or to have multiple attributes living in different systems to try to run a workflow like a refresh. Instead, you have one enterprise technology management system that automates the refresh process. And it's really automation that allows you to do this because the manual effort always introduces the data quality issues that then result in a challenge when you're trying to do something like a technology refresh or you're changing out a broken device or something along those lines.
Yeah. As you well know, there's been a lot of, historically, a lot of friction between the CIO and the CISO on any sort of functions that involve security and who is going to be responsible and all the rest of that. But here you're describing, you know, enterprise technology asset management crosses both those boundaries all the time. Who ends up running this program and how does it avoid this friction between the two organizations?
Yeah, absolutely. What's so interesting is that security for a long time has been setting policy, and then you have IT implementing that policy. And what we're realizing now is that's almost like, you know, the left hand using scissors and the right hand using a knife, and you're trying to figure out how to, you know, make a cake. You know, it's very difficult to not work together. And so you're seeing, for instance, at PwC, at HashiCorp, but some of these other companies, the CISO and the CIO role becoming one, or security rolling up into this, because the policy setting and the policy enforcement, they're very difficult to decouple. So what enterprise technology management allows you to do is set the policy and enforce the policy in one system. So it's not security giving you a report of technologies that may have a security risk, but it's an automated mitigation through various steps. Maybe it's an immediate action on the device via an API of an agent that's installed. Maybe it's the creation of a ticket for somebody to go and retrieve the device specifically. Maybe it's an escalation message that occurs to the regional leader of that area in order to return it. There's a lot of talk about like special economic zones and things like that related to technology. All of those questions can be answered inside of one system, uniting security and the IT organization, instead of creating a wall with which security throws requirements over and then IT turns them into tickets, versus letting the policy be enforced in real time. We believe that's the future, and our customers do too.
Are you actually seeing examples of that happening in real life?
Every day. I would say that's one of the primary use cases of managing enterprise technology management. If you start off with software asset management, hardware asset management, all of a sudden security goes, well, that's IT's job. But if you come in and you say, we have a database of the entire IT estate that is normalized, that is up to date because of automation and workflows and data hygiene, we're able to have one central database that we can now write policy on top of and automate that policy. Yeah, we're seeing that every single day.
If I'm curious about your opinion on this question, if it were true that the board would ever accommodate a CIO or a CISO to either join in an advisory capacity or become an actual member of the board, which one do you think is the right person?
Yeah, I think that's such an interesting question that many, many years from now, people, maybe not so many, hopefully, people will look back on and say, well, that didn't really make a lot of sense. To talk about IT without talking about security makes no sense. To talk about security without talking about IT makes very little sense. In order for a company to be able to run a protected environment, the IT leader needs to be a security person. And in order for the company to run a secure IT environment, the security person needs to have an IT operations background. So a lot of security is hygiene. There's a little bit of red team. There's a little bit of the, you know, perimeter understanding. But even that, in a lot of ways, is having an understanding of your perimeter, having an understanding of your attack surface. So I'm not a big advocate of CISO eats CIO or CIO eats CISO. I think that's wrong. I think the right answer is that you need to have both a security background and an IT operations background in order to do that job at the highest level successfully.
Yeah, but ironically, I think, you know, when you stand back from the problem space a little bit, the CIO is the guy who is ultimately both responsible and liable for the protection, defense of the information and technology assets in the corporation. Security is only one factor in that calculus. One other factor would be, you know, network infrastructure, and another factor would be, you know, cloud or on-premise computing hardware in the old context of, you know, data center management, right? And on and on and on. So I find it odd when the CISO keeps arguing that they belong on the board. They're the only ones that can help the board understand what the risks are associated with all these vulnerabilities, et cetera. But it's the chief information officer who's the, who, if either of those two people could actually really become an officer of the corporation or should, it is the chief information officer who should, and not the guy that runs the security part of the information organization.
Yeah, and I think that's what conversation that's happening today, right? Like when I speak to a lot of CISOs, they would say, well, we're taking over the CIO role because those knuckleheads don't know what they're doing. When you speak to the CIO, they say, oh, well, these security guys over here, well, that's just one niche thing. We have system, we have all these other things. I think security is an overlay on everything in technology. And I think that's what the gripe has been about for so long. It's that a security person has to be an IT person. You know, if you don't see the policy enforcement as part of your job, you're only digging the hole. You're not filling it back up. It's like two different jobs. So you need to be both thinking about the proverbial filling the hole as you are digging the hole. They're part of the same job. So I don't think that security and IT are like in a stale match. I think, quite frankly, they need to start realizing that, hey, this is the same job and it always has been the same job. So if we call it CISO or CIO, it doesn't matter. We have to make sure that our perimeter is protected, endpoints are installed, our devices are encrypted, they're returned on time. Those are all one job, not separate silo jobs. It's not SAM, HAM, it's all enterprise technology. And you should be treating it that way, the same way you should be treating security. It's not a siloed part of your organization. Everything you do is going to have a security element to it. And everything you do is going to have an IT process element to it. They're not two different jobs. They're the same jobs at that level.
Yeah. And back in the day, I actually remember people arguing that because they were ERP experts and that affected every component of the business, that they were better qualified than the CIO to become board members because they knew what was involved in running a business, which I always found entertaining.
It's interesting. I think that the future will be a technologist will be at the table. And I think that's what's really important here is that technology has gotten to the point where we need to be representing it at the board level. And technology includes security and includes IT operations and it includes ERP and it includes, it is an umbrella for all those things. What I think is most interesting is that 100 years ago, you didn't have the person who was managing the critical infrastructure inside of the room most often. But nowadays, you absolutely have to because technology is the biggest differentiator for most corporate organizations. How are we able to be faster, better, stronger? We're innovating. We're using technology in a way that other companies aren't. And you can see that in the retail environments as an example. Those highly digitally native retail environments that you walk into today are replacing the Sears and the other types of, I feel like I could mention their name, but those other types of old school retail environments, right? So technology is becoming so important that we're having a conversation about who should be in the room. I think this, you know, fight between CISO, CIO, I think we're all on the same team. And I think that's what's really most important.
Yeah, and if we're not, we better get there fast because time's running out here.
That's right.
A lot of our audience, you know, we're education audience, right? So folks are always curious about their future and careers and so forth. And you're an example of a, you know, guy came out of the technology, I'll call it side of information technology, though application specific perhaps, but then started your own digital agency and now you're doing this. Can you talk to us a little bit about what drove you into the marketing business as an advisory firm?
Oh, well, you know, it's funny that you bring that up. I, first of all, don't recommend anyone takes the path I did because it was very nonlinear. And looking back on it, could have been a lot quicker to get there. But the internet marketing thing was quite some time ago, Steve. I was going, this is like right after high school. Basically, the way we started was going from door to door. This is when AdWords and stuff like that was still pretty big, you know, early 2000s and that kind of thing. I mean, it's still big, but at the time it was just becoming a thing. So it was still, for most retail environments, small mom and pop shops, not that big of a deal. But yeah, we were going door to door, you know, showing them the website they had now, for instance, an optometrist in Mountain View, and then we'd show them the website they could have, and that was a way for us to support building a larger business. So I wouldn't over-index on that, and don't recommend it to anybody else.
Yeah, well, you know, that you're just describing a lot of people's real life experience too. Did you grow up in the Bay Area?
Yeah, I was really fortunate in that sense that I spent my high school years. My parents moved here from Europe. I grew up in Germany. My family's from Eastern Europe. My father's Latvian. My mother's Belarusian. So they moved me over here when I was in high school to the Bay Area. My father was an engineer, also in the software space, product manager at the time. So it gave me access to, you know, what I love the most, which is this technology world, and gave me access to things like Google AdWords in 2004, when, you know, people were still learning about it. It felt like it was right in our backyard. So in a lot of ways, growing up in the Bay Area, I was very fortunate.
Yeah, sure. Did you go to Mountain View High?
Los Altos High, but lived in Mountain View, so probably could have gone either way.
Yeah, well, that's terrific. We've only got a few minutes left. I wanted to give you an opportunity to tell us kind of what the near-term future of Amnitsa looks like from your point of view, and any initiatives you've got that you want to share with our audience.
Yeah, thanks. I think you really gave me the floor to talk about it, and I think it's the trend of the CIO, CISO, that becoming one function, I think is really interesting. And the system that our customers are using for enterprise technology management, the Amnitsa system, is that bridge in the policy setting and enforcement all happening in one system. I think that's a trend that's going to continue. In a lot of ways, we're the innovation leader in this, but it's an obvious next step conclusion that should happen. It's, why would you just give me a report? Why don't you do something about it? Kind of an obvious next step. So we're thinking and finding and starting to invest more and more into this idea of automation, into the idea of how do we do more with less? How do we enable and empower our workforce to really focus on the things that are impactful to the business and take the mundane everyday tasks like inventory, database out of the equation, taking things like enforcement, automating them, and allowing our IT teams to be running at a higher octane.
Well, that's great. It's all admirable. I certainly hope that you be a part of that equation that gets us all there. We definitely need to. And like I said, we need to get there really quickly. So anyway, look, it was great having you on the show, Arthur. And I, again, wish you luck. And hopefully we can revisit maybe in 6 or 8 months just to see how your path has gone here and what the progress of the company has been in the meantime.
That would be wonderful. Thanks for having me on, Steve.
Sure. Our pleasure. And thanks to our audience for another half hour of your time. And hopefully this was informative and entertaining as well, and enjoyed it as much as we did. Until next time, I'm your host, Steve King, signing off.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Cybersecurity Insights. You can connect with us on LinkedIn or Facebook, or send us an email at social@cybered.io. For more information about the podcast, visit cybered.io/podcast. Until next week, stay safe and secure, and we'll see you on the next episode of Cybersecurity Insights.